I apologize in advance. I'm coming down with a bit of a cold. So the work that I'm presenting today is part of a larger study looking at perception of access to screening facilities amongst low-income women in New Jersey. And so the project really focuses on both breast and cervical cancer. So I'm going to be presenting the results on the breast cancer for today, breast cancer screening. I unfortunately have no financial relationships to disclose. So it's fairly well established that African American women have lower breast cancer incidence than non-Hispanic white women, but tend to have higher mortality rates. And through the 1990s, while breast cancer mortality was declining for white women, it was continuing to increase for African American women, which really just widened the disparity that we've seen in breast cancer mortality. Likewise, Hispanic women in the United States have lower breast cancer incidence than both non-Hispanic white and non-Hispanic black women, but similar to non-Hispanic black women, have poorer mortality or poorer survival rates than the non-Hispanic white counterparts. Some of the differences in mortality have been attributed to, at least in part, stage of diagnosis. However, when even age and stage are taken into account, black and Hispanic women do tend to have significantly poorer rates than their white counterparts. Part of this can be explained by access to care, and that includes access to screening. And there's been shown to have some socioeconomic variation there, as well as racial and ethnic variation. So, for example, among women with no health insurance, the rate of mammography is about 45%. And for women who reported having no usual source of medical care, it's about 33 to 34%. The CDC's National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program have noted that low-income women, particularly women who are living at or below the poverty line, are significantly less likely to meet the guidelines for screening mammography compared to women who are either at or above that line. And as I said, in addition to these socioeconomic differences, there's some evidence that mammography utilization varies by race and ethnicity, and that can account in part for these racial and ethnic disparities in breast cancer survival. So, for example, Daly found that African American women were significantly less likely to adhere to mammography guidelines than white women, and there's also evidence that the same is true for Hispanic women. And reasons for non-adherence or lower screening rates really vary among populations of color, but while financial and socioeconomic barriers explain some of these differences, they don't explain all of it. And so there's a need to understand what else is happening. And right now, there's very little known about perception of access, right? So there's a lot of measurement about transportation and sort of physical access, what we know, but we don't know a whole lot about what women think about that access and how they perceive their access. And so that led me to my current study, which was to evaluate and characterize the relationship of this. And really trying to understand, are women, particularly low-income women, aware of the services that are available to them? And so we sought to recruit English and Spanish-speaking women. For the larger study, it's 21 to 79, but for these analyses, we're limiting it to women aged 40 to 79 who identify as non-Hispanic black or African-American, non-Hispanic white or Hispanic, who are either English or Spanish-speaking, who are either enrolled in or eligible for the SNAP program in the state of New Jersey. And just as a point of reference, these are the income guidelines for 2015 for SNAP. So a family of four is eligible if they earn about $17,000 or less per year. So it's a very low income, especially if you know what the cost of living is like in New Jersey. We conducted structured in-person interviews. We used this really lovely app called QuickTap Survey on the iPads, which made data collection really quite simple. And for some of the more sensitive questions, it allowed participants to enter their data directly without having the interviewer have to see it. We asked about whether or not the participant had ever had a mammogram and whether or not they had had a mammogram in the past 2 years. And we assessed perception of access simply by asking, do you know where to go for a cancer test if you needed a cancer test, would you know where to go? And following that up with, do you know of any free or low-cost mammography screening centers that you could access? It's a fairly long survey, so there's a lot more that I asked, but we asked the basics, the demographics, age, body mass index, SES, marital status, obviously race, usual source of medical care, transportation, etc. And what I'll be showing today are multivariate logistic regression models using SPSS, 95% confidence intervals, the standard. Sorry. So far we've collected data for the full study for about 354 participants. Though my research assistants are supposed to be working while I'm at APHA, so I hope that number's higher by the time I get home. And we've been doing these interviews over several counties in New Jersey, representing northern New Jersey, central New Jersey, and southern New Jersey. And while all of New Jersey is technically categorized as urban because it's a fairly population dense, there's quite a bit of variation, particularly in the southern and western counties where we have, believe it or not, farms. And so access is very different in a Passaic or Essex County, which is quite dense and far more urban, than a Mercer County, which is it's the southern westernmost county in New Jersey. Now these women, 112, were eligible for inclusion in these criteria for these analyses. And while the overall study sample, that 354, we were fairly evenly distributed for Black, white, and Hispanic at about 38%, 33%, 28%. Something we didn't expect is that for women over 40, we actually have quite a few more African-American women. So the African-American women are about 57% of the analysis, 24% for non-Hispanic white, and 19% for non-Hispanic, or for Hispanic women. The women are fairly similar when you look at age, annual income, and you can see that for more than half the women, regardless of race and ethnicity, the total income for the family was less than $10,000 per year, and that was supporting, on average, 2 to 3 children. So these are incredibly low-income women that we're interviewing. They were, again, even though the married or living as married numbers look fairly different, again, it's a small sample size, so that is not statistically significant, though it may be meaningful. We just aren't able to tease that out quite yet. And likewise, there actually is no statistically significant difference for education, or number of children. Body mass index, it's 0.055, so take that as you will, for the difference between Hispanic women and non-Hispanic white women. So about 3/4 of the women in the study reported ever having a mammogram, which is fairly similar to the overall rates for New Jersey. However, when we ask about having had a mammogram in the past 2 years, that number goes down to 56%. When you ask that for the general population, according to the BRFIS data for 2012, 77% of women age 40 or older reported having had a mammogram in the past 2 years. So there certainly seems to be at least an income effect right off the bat. So, I'm sorry, I lost my place. So looking at the patient participant characteristics, and so this is ever having had a mammogram versus not, or having had a mammogram in the past 2 years or not, you can see when you're looking if you've ever had a mammogram, there's not really a difference by race. Having had a mammogram in the past 2 years, there seems to be, it's interesting, it seems to be that Black women are more likely to have had a mammogram in the past 2 years, but these are unadjusted, so I'll show you in the next slide, or the next 2 slides, what happens there. Women who've ever had a mammogram are more likely to be older, which makes sense, so it's 51 versus 47 years for women who did not ever have a mammogram. But none of the other variables were statistically significant in the unadjusted. I'm going to skip forward to what's interesting. So after you mutually adjust for all the other variables in the model, What really stands out is that having insurance, as we know, makes a difference. So women, for women who have had insurance for the past 2 years, they are far more likely to report ever having had a mammogram. Again, sample size is small, so the confidence intervals are quite large, but we really do fully expect for this to hold. But the other interesting thing that came up is that just knowing where a free or low-cost mammography center really does seem to have an impact. So simply being aware of where you could go to get a free or low-cost screening increases the probability that you will have ever had a mammogram. And as I said, the non-Hispanic black, the magnitude of effect seems to me to say that there's probably something going on. The confidence intervals aren't quite there, but we're continuing to collect data, so we'll see what happens as we gather more women for this particular part of the study. And then we looked at whether or not mammogram, if you've had a mammogram in the past 2 years. And here, really, having had insurance is making all the difference. So the question was, have you had insurance in the past 2 years? And if you haven't, the chances are you also have not had a mammogram in the past 2 years. So there's something going on, and I think it's fairly interesting that we started data collection in late 2013, early 2014. So the Affordable Care Act was in place and people were enrolling, and it's still not doing what it's supposed to do, particularly in New Jersey, where insurance or enrollment rates are still fairly low. So I don't want to make a whole lot of strong conclusions because these are preliminary analysis based on a fairly small sample set, but I think that it's fairly safe to say that having insurance increases the probability of ever having a mammogram among low-income, racially diverse women, and that simply knowing the location of free and low-cost screening centers may increase the likelihood of utilizing screening. And what I can say is that in the larger sample for cervical cancer screening, this relationship has held and has held even stronger through the analyses. The next steps that we're taking is, of course, to continue data collection, but also to start looking at area-level factors in screening. And so we have address data for all of these women. We have their current address as well as their former address if they haven't lived there for more than 2 years, and we're geocoding that to census blocks so that we can look at what are their neighborhoods like, and how is that influencing their behaviors? As well as looking at the interaction of the individual and area level factor. So does it matter if you are on the higher end of the low income scale, but living in a significantly socioeconomically depressed community, or vice versa, and how those all interact? And we've already begun to collaborate with the New Jersey Cancer Education and Early Detection Program, which is active in all of the counties in New Jersey. And what they have found is that in counties like Essex, Passaic, the more urban, the more dense counties, they're able to do more outreach and bring more women in for screening. But in the more rural counties, Mercer, Hunterdon, et cetera, they're not even able to spend their budget, because the women are more spread out and just more difficult to reach. And so trying to figure out how we can target interventions through the NJC by county, and so that we can really tailor it to the needs of the women that are living in those counties. This is a career development award from the National Cancer Institute that's been supporting this work. And so I have my mentors who are at the New Jersey Cancer Institute, Drs. Katow Demasi and Elisa Bandera and Dr. Beth Jones at Yale University, who've really helped me with this, as well as Dr. Palmer at the Rutgers Cooperative Extension, who's really helped me with recruitment and identifying study sites. Thank you. So for the first, what I can say is that we also asked women, are they aware of the guidelines as they stood for the past several years? And even when I started this, the thinking had been starting to shift towards, older. Most women that I've been interviewing are not familiar with the guidelines. And so we say, are you familiar with the guidelines? And the majority has said no. And so we'd say, when should women start getting screened? And they said, whenever the doctor tells me. Or some say 30. Some women have said, oh, all women should do it, you know, all the time. You know, and how often. So women are, they're not aware of where to go. They don't know what the guidelines are. They don't know how often they should be screened. And so I'm not really sure that the changing guidelines are going to change their awareness or their perception, which is what I'm more interested in, and thinking about how we can do more to educate women on what they need to be doing and meeting them where they are and bringing them along. And I think part of that is because these women have so many competing interests and competing needs that really cancer prevention ends up being quite low on their priority list. So one of the other projects that I'm involved in is looking at low-income workers and access to healthy foods. And so, you know, they're having difficulty accessing healthy foods versus paying bills. And so this becomes not nearly as important in their lives. The second question was about the incidence rates. So can you say it again? I'm sorry, this cold. Right. So is the question, what do I think?
Well, before we knew that the issue was more about mortality, the grim picture was immortality, but now we have the grim picture of incidence as well. And so with this comes a perception about one of the risk factors in this kind of history. I was curious to see if you thought about that in the next iteration of this.
You know, we haven't gotten to that. Again, it's fairly new, and we're still, I think everyone's reacting to everything as it happens. But I do think it's telling, and I think that really what it makes us do is start to think about taking a broader view of what the risk factors are and stop looking at them as individual risk factors and start looking at the underlying systems that are really influencing the trends that we're seeing.
The first, the seed programs that you're working with are those that are actually the only ones offering free screening, and it begins specifically to those without insurance. So you asked specifically about that, and why did you see more evidence given the current success of those seed programs in getting them there?
So we didn't work specifically for this project with the seed program. We simply asked women, do you know of free and low-cost screening centers? So I actually specifically was working with the New Jersey SNAP Ed program, so women who are eligible for free and low-cost screening. And so it's less about how SEED is doing and more about do women know what SEED is doing and where they are. And what we have found is that and we give them at the end, in addition to a lot of other information about cancer, all of those locations, and I have yet to find one woman who has said, oh, I know where that place was, or I knew that they offered screening. So
it's an interesting discrepancy from the data that the seed program is reporting to state government.
My conversation, well, we'll talk about that later, but my conversation is that what they're reporting is they're having more success in specific counties, and it's not equal throughout the state. And there's a lot of variation there from my understanding of informal off-the-record conversations with the director.
And the second question relates to whether your associations may or may not be causal. Many women find it very difficult to navigate the system, and they know that the level of insurance is relatively limited. So those women who are sufficiently motivated or even adapted to get insurance, they might have gotten insurance specifically because they want to take other photography, or their skill set is different, so they're more likely to get insurance and emigrate. So you try to differentiate that in your question.
So we did ask about how well do you feel like you understand the healthcare system? How well do you feel that you understand if they said yes, that they have insurance? How well do you understand your insurance? We haven't put those into the analysis yet because I'm just not ready to dive that far into it. But we do have those questions to try to understand sort of medical care seeking behaviors and to differentiate. Most of the women who reported that they have insurance, it's Medicaid. There's almost no other insurance that's happening. But it may be, so we'll see. Hopefully next year I'll let you know in Denver. So what we've been doing is working with the centers, letting them help us identify the women, and I've been, because they're so such low-income women, I'm trying to include as many people as possible. And what has tended to happen is that the women who are coming tend to be younger women. And so our sample size for cervical cancer is, you know, 354 now, but there are fewer women who are 40 and older who are using these services. Because it tends to be younger women with families who are using SNAP-Ed and FNAP and these other programs. And so what we're doing now is trying to get into centers that really work more with women who are slightly older, though I loathe to say 40 is older. Still very young. So we're working with that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I will make one comment. The gentleman who asked the question in the back about incidents and his perception that that was a grim statistic, I really, you could certainly make the argument that that's an improvement. The lower incidence in African American women's was attributed to decreased screening. So if you increase screening, incidence will naturally go up without a true causal, like increased risk of risk factor. Is some sort of driving force.